Hey, everybody. We are live on this Monday. Good to see all of you guys. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So it's the first week of the Democratic National Convention.
A lot of
craziness right now. Yeah, it's a busy week on the economy because we just got some pretty terrible economic news. We're going to see how Democrats try to spin this at the Republican or the Democratic National Convention, because the economic indicators for the 29th month in a row shows just how bad the economy has become. And of course, the Kamala Harris team right now is trying to distance itself from Bidenomics. We're going to look at Bidenomics, Kamalanomics, and we're going to also talk about how the Fed is meeting right now in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So it's a very, very busy kind of few days here on the economy. And what does this mean for the U.S. dollar? All of that we're going to talk about.
But it's also super fun to see them say, you're fine. The economy's fine. Whatever you feel is happening to your budget is not happening. I don't understand how you can say that with a straight face and then look people in the eye who cannot put food on their table.
No, it's a great point, because
when they tell me, no, you can afford more groceries. Like, no, I can't. Yeah, you can. It's not struggling. Yes, I am. No, you're not. Okay.
You've had enough to eat.
And Kamala Harris gets up there at the, friggin' podium, and she's like, she's telling all of us, we already know groceries. She's like, yeah, grocery prices are really high. We know how putting food on the table is really difficult right now. Yeah, we know that. Stop telling us that. But then also stop telling us that we're not actually feeling that at the same time. It's a weird sort of double.
It's very condescending. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Go ahead.
It's like if the fire department shows up and they're like, yes, your house is definitely on fire. And here, let me go through a list of facts about the temperature that houses burn. And it's like, are you guys going to do anything? Like, no. We're just going to educate you on the fact that your house is definitely on fire.
That's a great analogy, because it does feel like the house is on fire. Things are burning. We also are going to talk about how the House Oversight Committee just released a report about impeachable offenses from President Biden. Do we care at this point? Is it worth our time to go down another impeachment trial? I want to know what you think about this, because there can be arguments made on both sides. Like, what does it matter now? He's already sold us down the river. Do we need this? What will it get? Well, let's take a look at the report, because, yeah, it's very damning. He did that, for sure.
We're also going to talk about Phil Donahue. We've talked about Phil on the show before, but he just passed away. And I think it's worth remembering how, when you are an anti-war voice in this world, our channel, we here at Redacted, are vehemently anti-war and anti-death of human beings. And he was canceled. He was silenced as a result of his anti-war stance. How many people could have been saved? How many people could have lived if Phil Donahue was elevated to maybe the highest platform at NBC News at the time? Instead, they silenced him. So we're going to remember Phil Donahue today as a strong anti-war voice. We're also going to talk about Kamala Harris copying Justin Trudeau on the housing crisis, because she basically stole Justin Trudeau's housing plan, which, get this, includes building new projects. Because how did that work out for us? Government, low-income housing in the United States, what a disaster. She's basically swiping that from Justin Trudeau. So we're going to talk about all of that and more on the show today. So let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Good to see all of you guys here. Someone in the chat says they love when we match. We didn't even try to.
We have matched the past few days.
No. Yeah. It wasn't our goal. It just happened that way. This was the cleanest thing. This was the cleanest, closest thing I could grab out of my closet.
Okay, you're making it seem like I can't keep house. I am very on top of Clayton's laundry. I just want to make that clear. He wears like the same three pairs of underwear because I can't stand any clothes in the hamper. And I have to wash them
right away.
There's
one in there. It's like an alert goes off. It's like beep, 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 beep. Something just passed through the hamper chute or whatever.
You have lots of clean clothes.
Yeah. Philip, you're the same way.
Mine are all clean. I did a load of laundry when I was helping David this weekend at his house, and I accidentally used his detergent rather than mine. I got home and he has lavender in his, and I'm like allergic to lavender, so I can't get anywhere near my clean clothes. So I couldn't even put them away. They're just sitting in the basket, so now I got to go re-launder them because I can't wear them.
Oh no.
David, he has a beard and he looks tough, but he's using lavender. He's a bit of a dandy.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's listening right now, I'm sure. All right, we're going to get to all of your news in a moment, but first, America, listen up. The world is getting more unpredictable by the day. We've got assassination attempts, rumors of civil war, an unstable stock market, and now the looming threat of the bird flu and monkeypox on everyone's mind. Did you know there's a bird flu summit coming in October? Yeah, and it's eerily reminiscent of Event 201 that foreshadowed the COVID plandemic. And get this, the first topic on the agenda is, quote, mass fatality management planning. If that doesn't send chills down your spine, I don't know what will. And we even called the bird flu pandemic hotline to talk to their team. They couldn't even tell us why they were holding this emergency bird flu pandemic seminar in October. Like, what's going on there? But here's the good news. You don't have to be scared if you are prepared. The wellness company created the medical emergency kit, and every home in America should have at least one of these just in your medicine cabinet. In your laundry room, in a safe place. They're packed with life-saving meds like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, antibiotics like amoxicillin. Even a Z-Pak is in there. And it's all backed by experts like our friend Dr. Peter McCullough. Imagine this. No more frantic searches for a doctor. No more emergency waiting rooms. Just a few clicks, and this kit will be in your house. Thank you for supporting the show. If you want to get $30 off checkout, go to twc.health/redacted right now. That's twc.health/redacted right now. twc.health/redacted. Well, just a few minutes ago, we got some unbelievable economic numbers. The U.S. leading economic indicators have plunged for the 29th month in a row. It's worse than COVID lockdowns. And right now, the Democratic National Convention kicking off in Chicago, where you will have Democrats and Kamala Harris trying to distance themselves from Bidenomics, pretending that they had nothing to do with the last 3.5 years of government policies, which have gotten us here. Skyrocketing inflation, of course, prices up over 20% for just about everything in your family, from gas prices, of course, to food on your table, to rent, to electricity, to energy costs. It's been a disaster. But they're telling you that, hey, when Kamala Harris is elected president, all of that will go away. Right. But she's in power now. So it really doesn't make much sense. Right now, we're also swimming in massive amounts of credit card debt. And the United States average Americans right now have used up almost all of their savings. Really, really troubling. On top of all of that, the Federal Reserve is meeting right now in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to discuss inflation, to discuss interest rates being slashed. So a lot of economic news that we want to sift through today right now on the economy. And for that, someone who's deeply plugged into what's happening with the U.S. dollar, what's happening with inflation, what's happening with precious metals, and all of it, is Kevin DeMeritt. He is the CEO of Lear Capital, and he joins us. Great to check in with you, Kevin. Great to see you here on the show.
Yeah, great to be on the show, Clayton.
Well, you're here at an interesting time because tonight, Monday, we've got the DNC kicking off. We've got Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with the Fed meeting right now on the recession and inflationary numbers. But I just wanted to get your take on Kamala Harris, because unbelievable sort of bombshell this past week when she comes out and announces that when she's elected president, price controls, like communist era price controls, is what she's going to employ to get these companies from stop charging you so much money when you go to the grocery store. What did you think initially when you heard this?
It absolutely has to be the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I mean, you just have to crack open a history book and you can go back and look at every country who's ever tried it, and it doesn't work. And it doesn't work because you're controlling one part of the price equation, which is the top price, the price you and I pay for goods and services. So if I stop companies being able to increase their prices, but their cost of goods continue to increase, then at some point they don't make any money, they go out of business. Or like we saw in the 70s, the government comes to their senses and says, oh my gosh, we can't continue this price controls because everybody's going to go out of business. So we're going to stop the price controls, and then what happens? Prices go completely out of control because now they have to make up for the lost ground to stay in business, and prices just skyrocketed. In the 70s, we had inflation up around 15%. So this is just an incredibly stupid idea that's not going to work. It's going to make matters much, much worse. The other part that I will say is she's concentrating on the wrong problem. The definition of inflation forever and still is too much money chasing too few goods. They caused too much money to be printed. Now you have that too much money chasing the too few goods. That's a cause of inflation. If you want to concentrate on the problem, you got to slow down the money supply a little bit.
A couple of things to unpack there. I think what you said was brilliant, specifically on the prices, going back to the 1970s. And if you look at grocery stores, she's really been focusing on grocery stores. She's really trying to be relatable, you know, on these speeches. She's like, you know, I know it. You go to buy bacon, it's just more expensive. You go to buy milk, I see it. I see it, as if she's trying to distance herself from the past 3.5 years. But grocery stores specifically, I mean, they operate on a 1-2% net margin. My father used to run a grocery store. He owned a grocery store. They didn't make very much money, and they can't survive if their suppliers raise prices. So the government announces that food producers, you know, you have these big food producers like ConAgra and Tyson and Hormel, they aren't going to be allowed to raise any sort of prices. So not all grocery stores, I mean, they're not going to survive at all. You have these very minimal net margins that they have actually survived on. This idea that grocery stores is just jacking up the prices, it's ridiculous.
Well, look, grocery stores don't live on high margins. Farmers don't live on high margins. The chicken has no idea how much the food costs, right? He's putting out an egg that's up 20%. It's not the chicken that's the problem. It's too much money chasing too few goods. And the cost of everything to get that food to the chicken, to keep the chicken in a cage, to get the egg to the market with gasoline and a truck and so on and so forth, all of that's gone up. And she's saying, hey, look, I'm just going to stop the price of the egg going up. It's not the problem. It's the money that's chasing the egg and all the other goods and services along that come along with it to get it to market. That's the problem. So this just does not work. It hasn't worked in history. It's not going to work here. And if she does the price controls, you will have a worse inflation problem, just like we had in the 70s, in 9-10 months when she releases the price controls.
We also had the Biden administration a few months ago changing the definition of recession, right? They changed the definition so that we can't call it a recession. And then they even like changed the Wikipedia page for the word recession. And now that page is locked. It's hilarious. Like if you just want to, you just move the goalpost on what it means to be in a recession. Do you think we are in a recession and or a depression? And how, if not, is it, do you think it's going to get better or worse in the next few months?
Well, first of all, they've been changing the definition of words and the formulas for words all the time. I mean, they've changed the definition and the words for inflation or the formula for inflation for years now just to try to keep inflation down. So if you went back to the old formula, inflation would still be at, you know, 9-11%, depending on which formula you're using and from the old days. But everyone's talking about recession, no recession. It makes absolutely no sense. People have to wake up here. There is a recession coming. I'm not sure we're in it yet, but we're extremely close. Number one, you've got an indicator that's been 100% accurate for 100 years, which is an inverted yield curve. That inverted yield curve can't tell me exactly when the recession is coming, but it's a 100% chance that there is one coming, and it's fairly soon. The second is, not only do you have these indicators out there starting to fall off a cliff, but you have the IMF, which is, you know, it's kind of independent, at least, you know, looks at all countries. They're forecasting U.S. economic growth of 2.6% for 2024, which is off by about 0.1%. But next year, it's off by 26%. So they're forecasting 1.9% economic growth. That's a 26% difference in growth. That's a recession, and it's coming. Now, look, I'm in the world of precious metals, so everybody says, well, you're probably kind of a little bit negative on the economy because of precious metals. Well, first of all, they've been outperforming the stock market since 2000. So it doesn't matter if there was a recession or not. This money printing is causing the price of precious metals to increase. But here's a guy, Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, that says, and I quote, I've been pointing to geopolitics, housing, deficits, spending, quantitative tightening, all these things could cause some consternation in the markets. I give a 35 to 40% chance that we will have a soft landing. Meaning, if you think of it the opposite way, he's giving it about a 60% chance that we're going to have a recession. I keep saying, look, if you gave me a parachute and the guy says, look, there's a 60% chance the parachute isn't going to open, I'm not jumping out of the plane. Right. But these are your retirement. This is people's retirement and their savings. And you have, based on what he's saying, a 60% chance there's going to be some problems in the economy, you know, over the next 12 to 18 months. So it's a guy I'd listen to when he's talking about things like recession, because he's not in the business of wanting a recession when you own a large bank.
Well, I always say here and in all my other channel, you know, talking about investing, it's like, God, my wife and I, we have our IRAs, we have our children's IRAs, our self-directed IRAs, and they're, you know, heavy with precious metals and real estate. Like that's what we invest in, tangible assets, and, you know, which has outpaced inflation. So that's something we talk about all the time. And then the Fed, of course, is meeting right now in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I want to get your take on this, Kevin. They're going to be talking about a recession, whether or not we're in one, whether we can protect ourselves from getting to one. In a slashing of interest rates here in September, it seems likely that that's going to happen. I mean, we even see maybe a couple interest rate slashings over the course of the next couple of months. So what do you think that will do to the economy right ahead of the election? It's like giving a gift, I think, to Kamala Harris for the election by the Fed slashing these interest rates. And also the U.S. dollar, the big de-dollarization process right now. I mean, countries, BRICS countries, they're dumping the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world, and they're partnering with themselves, saying we're done being bullied by the United States and the U.S. dollar. So what do you think we're going to see out of this Fed meeting, and what's your sense as we head into the fall?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, Jerome Powell's kind of walking a tightrope. So he, on one hand, he's got the U.S. economy going into a recession soon, if I had to guess. So he's thinking about lowering interest rates to try to keep that from happening. And on the other side, he's got enormous amounts of central banks liquidating dollars and purchasing other assets, a lot of gold right now, but they're liquidating the U.S. dollar into the economy, the market, which could cause a lot of inflation. So if he lowers interest rates here in the U.S. too much, then those central banks who are already selling are going to sell more. Those dollars are going to come to the United States. And again, the definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. Those dollars chase goods. The inflation rate stays higher. So he's got a real tightrope here. They put themselves in this position, Clayton, by printing up so much money. It's just unbelievable, right? We're drowning in a record $35 trillion in debt with interest payments this year, almost at $1 trillion. We're borrowing $2.5 trillion just to pay the interest on the debt. So, you know, lower interest rates would help that out, but it's not going to help these central banks selling dollars, which could cause even more inflation. So he's got a really kind of a tough situation to try to maneuver through. I feel like we're in the cartoon with, you know, the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, where, you know, Wile E. runs off the cliff and he's just hanging there. And then, you know, he drops to the bottom. We're waiting for the drop to the bottom here.
It's really troubling. And, you know, the de-dollarization continues. So they can do all they want, talk about inflation. Kamala can talk about putting in a housing, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later in the show tonight about her housing plan, which is just a ripoff of Soviet era style housing, like what Justin Trudeau has done up in Canada, a disaster. So they're going to just throw billions more dollars into this mix while these other countries are just running away from the U.S. dollar. I mean, how scared are you? Like, once all of these countries back away from the U.S. dollar, where are those U.S. dollars that they're dumping? Where are they going to go?
Yeah, it's a great question. You look right now, and I had this statistic right before the show here. It says the share of U.S. dollar reserves held by central banks fell to 58.4%, the lowest since 1999. On average, it was right around 80%. So this has fallen by 25%. People ask me, why is this important? Why are you so nervous about these countries selling dollars? Those dollars go someplace and they come back to the United States. So I make this example for people. If you took Apple shares and there was $1 billion worth of Apple shares, and you had $1 billion worth of Apple shares, 500 billion here in the United, or 500 million here in the United States, and 500 million outside the United States, that for 50 years basically hasn't been sold. That's the world's reserve currency, and those, let's say they're Apple shares. And after 50 years, those central banks that own those Apple shares say, hey, look, I'm just going to liquidate the Apple shares. I don't want them anymore. What happens to the value of Apple? It's going to crash 50%. So more money is held outside, more U.S. currency is held outside the United States than inside the United States. One big reason is because of the petrodollar. All countries have to use the U.S. dollar to go buy oil. And the Saudis have said, basically, I don't know if I want to continue with this petrodollar situation. We might want to work with the BRICS countries, so on and so forth. If those countries don't have to hold those dollars and they start liquidating them, what happens to the value of the dollar here in the United States when you flood the market with those dollars? It's going to be the same thing that if you flood you know, the Apple shares that these central banks were holding back into the economy, Apple crashes, the dollar crashes. It's the scariest part of the entire economy to me. It's my most worrisome thing that keeps me up at night, because you can't do anything about it. These banks can sell. There's not a darn thing we can do about it. And all of those dollars coming back would take the inflation rate through the roof. So again, Powell has a big tightrope situation that he's got to figure out how to maneuver around so that these countries don't liquidate.
They've boxed themselves in on this. I mean, and again, we saw what happened with Japan. Last year, we bullied them into not selling their U.S. treasuries. You know, no, fine. We're just hang on to them in Japan. Now we know what a disaster that's been for them holding on to these bunk assets right now, the U.S. dollar. It's been a disaster. Kevin, you guys put together a great report at Lear. I've read it. I sent it to a bunch of friends as well. The de-dollarization report that you guys put together, and you guys have made it available for our audience. I'd love for you to share it with them, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so we put a report together on the debt, de-dollarization, interest rates, and inflation. So just people to get educated a little bit here. What are the things that they can invest in if the dollar is going to fall, if inflation is going to stay higher for a little bit longer, if interest rates start to come down? What are some alternatives? You brought up precious metals and real estate. Look, you can print up a bunch of dollars, but you can't print gold and you can't print real estate. So those types of assets, those hard assets, are going to be some of the alternatives that people may want to look at. And that's what the report's going to go through. They can give us a phone call and get this report absolutely free. It's about 16, 18 pages long. Also, if they call or use the URL at LearRedacted.com, we're going to put $250 into their account automatically. If they purchase gold or silver, they can use it for their IRAs, all the IRA fees that the custodian charges. We'll cover that for them, or free shipping and insurance if they want home delivery. So if they give us a phone call at 800-613-3557, 800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com, we'll get the report out there, put the $250 into their account, and hopefully get them a little educated on what we think at least is happening out there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting. We've got the Jackson Hole meeting right now ahead of this big September Fed meeting on slashing interest rates. As we head into this election, it's going to be a volatile situation right now. And of course, everything that we're going to hear from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, we'll be watching this platform very closely and dissecting it here on the show, as will Kevin. Kevin, great to see you as always. Thanks so much for your expertise on all of this.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And I think Dan Clark in the chat just a second ago said he thinks a loaf of bread is going to be $30.
Jeez.
I think it's David Clark, I think. And then the Washington Post, I mean, you guys saw this just out with basically saying Kamala Harris has squandered what could have been a golden opportunity to outline a clear economic vision. The Washington Post slamming her. And so too is the New York Times. They basically said everything she's like kind of throwing out right now are populist gimmicks. And price gouging, she said, was to blame for corporate price gouging rather than addressing the underlying economic challenges. In fact, and she was asked about her policy. You know, she's not been they've not let her talk to reporters at all. They've kept her away from reporters. And a reporter managed to ask her about her new economic plan, and it went about as well as you can imagine. Listen to her response to just trying to talk about her new economic plan. Listen.
Economic policies last week.
Yeah.
Can you explain how you're going to pay for those, and can you give us a sense of what other policies you want to unveil going forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, you just look at it in terms of what we are talking about, for example, around children and the child tax credit and extending the EITC. It's at $6,000 for the first year of a child's life. The return on that investment in terms of what that will do and what it will pay for will be tremendous. We've seen it when we did it in the first year of our administration. We reduced child poverty by over 50%. So that's a lot of the work. And then what we're doing in terms of the tax credits, we know that there's a great return on that investment. And when we increase home ownership in America, what that means in terms of increasing the tax base, not to mention property tax base, what that does to fund schools, again, return on investment. I think it's a mistake for any person who talks about public policy to not critically evaluate how you measure the return on investment. when you are strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities, and in particular the economy of those communities, and investing in a broad-based economy, everybody benefits, and it pays for itself.
No, no,
it pays
no.
For itself.
I'm sorry. Wait. I can't let her say that. That's a lie. Child poverty has doubled since 2021, since they took office. We showed you that chart. If you look at our live show on August 8th, the bit we did about Kamala Harris's whole freedom campaign, she's talking about free from childhood poverty when the Biden administration has doubled it. In 2021, the rate was 5.2%, and it is now 12.4%. So F you for saying that. You've made it harder for kids, not better. So you can pound sand. You can lick buttholes for that. No, okay. You don't get to say that. No.
But no, it's going to pay for itself. Don't worry about it. We'll do this, and then when someone down the line gets a job, it'll pay for itself. That's how this works. The return on the investment, she says, is fantastic.
And the data I just gave you is from the census. I'm not making that up. So she can literally say she's a litigator, not an economist, and giving us the worst plan ever, having hurt people for 4 years. I cannot abide that. No. Sorry.
Coming up a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about her proposed $25,000 down payment assistance program for housing. So that's how they'll do it for low income and illegal immigrants in the United States. Here's $25,000 down. How is that going to not drive prices higher? Of course it will. We saw that with electric vehicles. Oh, you want to slash thousands of dollars off the price of electric vehicles for incentives?
Right.
Great. What do the auto manufacturers then do? They raise the prices to cover these incentives.
Right. And it feels like she's bribing us. And that is exactly what it felt like during the summer of 2020 when Biden was campaigning for president, because he continued to say, I will give you this money when I am elected as COVID stimulus. And he and President Trump got in this bidding war where they just kept increasing what they would give to people. And we are now paying for that collectively, which we warned about, not us, economists warned about, and we didn't listen. We're here. That happened. And now they're bribing again. So please do not fall for that, people.
Yeah. Madeline in the chat says, housing, $25,000 down payment help will cause home prices to go up. Exactly, Madeline. Yeah. Let us know your thoughts on that. We're going to talk about that coming up here in a few moments in the show as we look at all of these big world events that are happening right now. And of course, we're going to focus on the movement now to impeach President Biden, because the House Oversight Committee has released a report, and we won't tell you. We'll just kind of tease it for a second here. Imagine what they found inside of the improprieties and offenses that the House of Biden have committed here. We'll talk about that in a second. But
I'm
first,
just so mad because they're acting like economics is this great mystical mystery, and it's not. Like, they could actually study and listen to economists, but instead it's all politics. So that pissed me right off, Clayton. That clip pissed me right off.
No, well, that's why I played it. I like to wind you up. But they've never had a job. They've never had a job. They've never owned a business. They've never run a business. And the people that are running our government have never run businesses.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, then they all made fun of Trump for being a businessman.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Biden business coming up. So, okay, I will calm down because we're going to talk about efforts to impeach Joe Biden because of the Biden brand and what the House report has said. We're also going to talk about how the liberals were once the party of anti-war. Phil Donahue, though, got fired for that. He passed away over the weekend. And we want to remember the fact that the media lies to us about war. They did it in 2003 over the Iraq War, causing millions of deaths. That anti-war voice is still missing from the media. And we're going to talk about what might have happened had we not deplatformed anti-war voices in order to, I guess, honor the passing of Phil Donahue. Also, we're going to talk about the Trudeau economics and how Kamala Harris has just sort of copy and pasted. But first, we want to tell you about Shopify, because guess what? Shopify is a great way to grow your online commerce business. And in fact, the Redacted store runs on Shopify because, you know, we're busy reporting the news. We can't just make a shop. So Shopify did it for us. That's how we bring you Redacted merchandise that we are so honored to see when you are able to buy it. So Shopify is a place where we went to create the store. When we have a new idea for something, such as a redacted hoodie or shirt or cup, we just put it up on Shopify and they take care of the rest. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind not just the redacted store, but also Rothy's, Allbirds. They have entrepreneurs of all sizes in 170 countries. And it's super easy. You just go to their site and they help you build out your brand based on whatever it is your idea is, from launch your online shop stage to first real life store stage to all the way to, oh my gosh, you made $1 million stage. So again, you can sign up for Shopify, launch your business to the world, and you get a $1 per month trial period if you go to shopify.com/redacted, all lowercase. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted. Well, the House Oversight Committee released a report concluding that President Biden, quote, committed impeachable offenses. I did not say that impeachably, unimpeachably. He did it. We know he did it. We've been covering all the things, all of the evidence that's been uncovered by this report as it's been slowly coming out in a drip. But now we have it in one big report and we're going to show it to you. But here's the thing. Okay, we know he used his influence and made a ton of money. What do we do about it now? Is it worth our time, given that the house is on fire? Is it worth our time? So I want to put this question to you as a thought experiment, because we have to decide. Recall that President Trump was impeached 1 week before he left office. Where did that get us? What did we get for it? I think we can all agree that got us nowhere. Nothing. It gave Democrats a talking point, and that's about it. So if Joe Biden did in fact enrich himself, which we know he did, and his family through his political career, should we want an impeachment given that he is old and senile and powerless? Do we want this? There are two valid arguments here. Number one, no one is above the law. He used the American people to make his family rich, made decisions that were not in our best interest, but in his best interest. He sold us down the river. We will never really have justice for that because it's done. He already did it. He has the money. He made those political decisions. So, but if we don't prosecute him, how do we deter other people from doing this in the future? Then again, you can argue it's a humongous waste of time, taxpayer money. He's leaving office. Democrats will never see this evidence. In fact, they will spend their time trying not to see it. It will go nowhere. It will frustrate the heck out of all of us. So should we just leave it? What do you think? Do we take it and run, or do we leave it? What do you think, Clayton?
No, I mean, as someone in the chat here just on Rumble, CH17 says he's too senile to stand trial, case closed. I mean, look, I don't care if he's too senile. I don't care if he's too old. It doesn't matter. You know, they try to do this with mafia bosses, right? Where they wheel them into courtroom. They're like, he's clearly, he's got Alzheimer's. He can't, he's wearing a robe. He's so old. I don't care, because I think it sets the precedent for future presidents to know that you cannot do these things.
Yeah.
And members of Congress, for crying out loud.
They still try Nazis in their 90s.
Yeah. Or in Canada, they applaud them. They give them standing ovations in Canada.
Not they.
Right. But they seek these people around the world. They go to Argentina to find Nazis and bring them to account.
Right.
You hold the highest office in the land, or the second highest office in the land, as vice president, and you're enriching you and your family off of American tax dollars, and you're lying about it, and this is absolute corruption, and he should be brought to justice for it.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the evidence and then see if you can come down on one side or the other, because the argument is very strong. The country is already too partisan. We don't have time for this. We're funding foreign wars. The economy is crap. Can we even afford to do this? Is it a distraction from the things that need to happen going forward to make the place that we live in better for our children? Will it make it better for our children? So let's take a look. Here is the report. It is based on a year of evidence gathering that started in 2023. The committee has seen checks loan documents. They've spoken to whistleblowers. It is dense. Again, you should seek it out and look for yourself. Here is specifically what they found. This is a summary. They found that he did use his position to make money. A lot of it since he was vice president. I would suspect that did not start during his vice presidency, but that's as far back as they looked. They say that his family was using his influence to make money and that it is, quote, inconceivable that President Biden did not understand that he was taking part in an effort to enrich his family by abusing his office of public trust. They say that the Biden family has made sophisticated efforts to conceal all of this by using LLCs, intermediaries, smaller transaction. They also say he concealed evidence. He removed evidence to and documents specifically, if we could go to the next one, he removed evidence to his personal residences, and he showed things to his ghostwriter who did not have clearance, and he had the White House lie for him about this. In fact, they claim, and I don't know if this is true, that the president could be impeached based on just the fact that the Biden administration lied for him, whether he knew about it or not. From this slide, they say the House need not show that the president directly ordered his subordinates to obstruct an investigation. In certain circumstances, the president may be impeached for the actions of subordinate officials, and they base this on the Nixon impeachment. So that's interesting. Again, I can't comment on whether or not that's true. I'm not a lawyer, but interesting, right? Because the Biden administration is so chock full of liars and obstructors that we could hold the president accountable for that. They also claim that a lot of this money was marked as loans, but never paid back. Over $8 million in loans, but they couldn't find the receipts for any repayment. So they think that could have been gifts.
Duke Raul in our chat says, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Yeah, you can be like, oh, I'm just ignorant of this law. I didn't know that I couldn't do this.
That's you can't. The president doesn't know the law?
That's no excuse.
He has a law degree. I don't think we can say that he couldn't have understood or he didn't know any better.
Right.
Okay, where were we? Bribes. Yeah. Loans. They had loans with no receipts. So they're thinking those were probably not loans. They were marked as loans. Now, recall that President Trump was impeached by only one chamber of Congress for asking Ukrainian President Zelensky for a favor. That favor word, it all hinged on that, right? Which, not ironically, was about this very corruption in this report. President Trump did not get anything for that favor. He didn't get the investigation that he wanted. He didn't get money. The mere act of asking is what put him in that hot water. President Biden, however, received actual money from foreign actors and enrichment, and so did his family. They peddled what the committee brands as the Biden brand. That's what they called it. They noted that they knew the brand was Joe Biden and everyone in his inner circle could peddle it and they could use it, you know, dinners, golf course, over the phone. Hey, you know, a lot of this came from Devin Archer. The Bidens, they say, didn't have a golf course. They didn't have property. They don't have a clothing line or a media business. They just sold their influence as consultants without being lobbyists. And the committee has traced wires from foreign sources to Hunter Biden with Joe Biden's home address and money from the Biden's family transaction with this Chinese conglomerate. We've seen this. We've seen it in stock, in Excel spreadsheets. We saw it when Hunter Biden's assistant was asking, like, hey, pay this back here. Joe's going to pay this. We've seen the evidence. We've looked at it over the last 2 years. And indeed, it was very lucrative for them to the tune of $35 million is what they've seen. Biden family members receiving over $18 million from foreign sources, and their schemes, $27 million. Totaling 35 is what the committee has seen that they could uncover. So what do they want? Well, here's what the committee recommends is that the Constitution's remedy for a president's flagrant abuse of office is clear. impeachment by the House of Representatives and removal by the Senate. Despite the cheapening of the impeachment power by Democrats in recent years, they say, the House's decision to pursue articles of impeachment must not be made lightly. As such, this report endeavors to present the evidence gathered to date so that all members of the House may assess the extent of President Biden's corruption. So how much of that is still going on, given nobody's going to buy the Biden brand? He has no power anymore, presumably, right? We don't know who's running the White House. We don't know what that would get anybody to buy into the Biden brand. It seems to me their payday is over. But now that you see at least a summary of this evidence and where to find it for yourself, what do you think? Should we impeach this old senile guy? What do we get for it? Let me know what you think. Where do you come down on this?
You know what's interesting is I was diving into the Clinton Foundation data over the past couple of days. And what was interesting is you want to know how and why it was so important for Hillary Clinton to try to keep being in the limelight. Because yeah. Her husband, of course, was able to bring in hundreds of thousands of dollars per speech using the Clinton Foundation as basically a large money laundering scheme to launder money into the Clinton world, right? Funnel money into the Clintons and curry favor, get favors in return, and using the Clinton Foundation as a way to like funnel all of this money. But then as soon as Hillary lost and she was out of the mix, suddenly all of those Clinton Foundation bookings, they plummeted down to about 70%. So the brand of the Clintons is all about corruption. It's all about people being able to buy and curry favor with them by booking Bill Clinton for large speeches. And, oh, we'll pay him $300,000 because we know that money will make its way back and we'll get favorable responses inside the Secretary of State's office.
Sure. I mean, I don't see any harm in, say, Unilever hires one of the Clintons to speak and they want to hear about leadership or whatever. But the problem is that what does that then do to the people who are voting on certain business legislations? It's even worse when it's foreign actors, clearly. So, yeah, and who is promising access to whom? There are clear rules about this. Congressional members have to follow certain clear rules.
It's all about access. That's the whole reason that Burisma hires, Hunter Biden for $50,000 a month. It's not because they wanted his business acumen.
Right.
All they wanted to do was curry favor with Joe Biden and get favors. That's it. In this massive money laundering scheme. And that's exactly the case. Thomas Massie, friend of the show, Congressman Thomas Massie, who's one of the bravest members of Congress, he on Twitter today, he's calling for that it should be mandatory that if you have dual citizenship, if you're a member of Congress and you have dual citizenship, that you should renounce the citizenship of the other country if you become a member of Congress. Or he says, at the very least, you have to disclose that, you are a dual citizen of Israel.
And not then vote on issues related to your dual citizenship.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, talk about it.
That's too reasonable. He will not get his way.
Farah. Yeah, exactly. Farah agrees, Drew Kisek says. Farah agrees.
Yeah.
All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. Phil Donahue passing away, but it's an interesting time to remind all of us about those anti-war voices and what happens to them in mainstream media. They are silenced. So we're going to look back at Phil Donahue a little bit here because it's now more important than ever that anti-war voices should be elevated. Instead, they're being silenced at a greater clip than we've ever seen before. Now, we just saw what happened with Scott Ritter, for instance, right? And if you speak out against these wars, whether it's in Gaza or Ukraine, I mean, talking about the Kursk attacks over the past 24 hours, again, a third bridge attacked inside of Russia. Russia now saying this war, we are done negotiating, absolutely done. That means Ukraine could be wiped off the face of the planet. And if you speak out against these wars, you speak out against the provocations and the genocide, then you are silenced in the mainstream media. So we're going to talk about that. But first, we do want to tell you about our friends over at Bunker Life, because cybercrime has become the third largest economy in the world, trailing in size only to the United States and China. Cybercriminals target people and businesses by exploiting vulnerabilities in the everyday tools we use, like email, social media, messengers, free cloud storage, as well as weak passwords. In fact, just this month, AT&T announced that hackers compromised all of their customers' texts and call records, which exposes us to even more threats. And I think within the past 48 hours, of course, every American had their Social Security number revealed. You know, isn't anyone protecting us? You know, we the people at Bunker are. Bunker is an affordable all-in-one app that protects you against identity theft, cybercrime, and surveillance. Bunker includes patent-pending secure messaging, easy-to-use password management, and secure cloud storage. So why pay for several different applications when you can protect yourself with Bunker for $12 annually? So, Bunker is owned and operated by security professionals with a long history of protecting the public against cyber criminals and surveillance. So, right now, download. You can go to bunker.life, just B-U-N-K-R, there's no E, B-U-N-K-R.life today, and get your first year free when you use the code REDACTED. That's the first year free using our code REDACTED. Protect yourself against identity theft and cybercrime. Visit bunker.life today, download the app, and use that code REDACTED to get your first year for free.
Well, Phil Donahue died today at the age of 88, and I want to take the opportunity to remind everyone that Donahue was fired at the end of his career for being against the war in Iraq. And that has important significance for us right now as the United States continues to drag us into a war to support Israel. He was known, of course, for his sensational talk show, but his career was sunset early for cautioning the American people against rushing to support the Bushes in their wars in the Middle East. So let's bring this back around today because it's important to remind ourselves why we were dragged into the war in Iraq. And it's very haunting to think, what if we had listened to him? What if he had been allowed to speak to the American people against war? What would have, how many lives might have been saved if those voices had not been silenced? So in February of 2003, Phil Donahue had the number one show on MSNBC, and he was fired rather suddenly. Here is what an internal leaked memo from MSNBC said about that firing. It said, an internal memo leaked to the press stated that Donahue was hurting the image of the network. He would be a, quote, difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. Donahue was fired and never returned to the airwaves. The memo went on to say that Donahue, quote, seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives. Like he seemed to delight in that. He found it a sick pleasure to speak out against the war. The report went on to outline a possible nightmare scenario where the show became, quote, a home for the liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors are waving the flag at every opportunity. What they meant was Fox News. Can we put that last screen back up, the memo? Because what I didn't highlight here, but I want to draw your attention to, is that General Electric and Microsoft, MSNBC's founders and defense contractors that went on to make tremendous profits for the war, were not tolerating a dissenting voice. So they were sponsoring the network. And they were like, wait a minute, we're going to make a ton of money in this war. You need to shut that guy down. So they did so, not just because they knew that Fox News was going full on support the troops, support the war, but also because they needed to bow down to their paymasters, clearly. So, but one thing that just makes me laugh now when you look at this memo is that they said MSNBC can't be a home for the liberal anti-war agenda. That does not exist anymore. The only wisps of anti-war that we get come from libertarians, veterans, and very few Republicans like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul. There is no liberal anti-war agenda. There is no conservative anti-war agenda. There is only the uniparty pro-war agenda. They both want war. MSNBC at the time did not want to have any anti-war programming. In fact, nobody did. Here's a study from 2003 that shows that every network amplified pro-war voices. This study studied ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, and PBS. Here is what they found, is that of all of these programming, that they had mostly military pundits on, and that using the sources, they said that 76% of total sources, more than 2 out of 3, were either current or former officials. They found that they platformed almost no anti-war voices at all. Less than 10% were anti-war. And this, of course, was by design, and it holds up today. No network will present anti-war voices, and if they do by accidentally having on Jeffrey Sachs, they cut him off and never invite him back again. What's worse, though, is that the media failed to tell us that even U.S. intelligence at the time knew that it was clear that the war in Iraq was fought for Israel. This is from Scott Horton's great reporting about the 9/11 wars from his book, Enough Already. It says that National Security Advisor Rice's assistant, Philip Zelikow, admitted what experts understood, but the average American was never told, that the war was to be fought primarily to protect the interests of Israel, not the United States. So this is from his own memo, U.S. intelligence, saying, why would Iraq attack America or use nuclear weapons against us? I'll tell you what I think is the real threat and has been since 1990 is the threat against Israel. And this is the threat that dare not speak its name because the Europeans don't care about that threat. I will tell you frankly, and the American government doesn't want to lean too hard on it rhetorically because it's not a popular sell. Don't look at the links between Iraq and Al-Qaeda and then ask yourself, gee, is Iraq tied to Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the people who are carrying out suicide bombings in Israel? Of course it is. Easy answer, the evidence is abundant, but nobody told the American people that the war was a solid to Israel. That's why we were dragged into that. So people were canceled for it. Phil Donahue is one. It also mentions Jesse Ventura was another. So think about it. The war in 2003 was in the interest of Israel, but what if we had listened to anti-war voices? What if those links had been reported by the media? They were not. Over 4,000 U.S. servicemen were killed in that conflict. 31,000 were wounded. And then that's just us. The Iraqi death toll and the wars that resulted from that, we're still counting. We showed you this report from 2023 about the nonstop war on terror that now has a death toll from this Brown University study of over 4.5 million people and counting. This comes from not only that war, but the wars that were spun out of that in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. Most of these are indirect deaths, meaning they come from the post 9/11 wars, destruction of economies, public services, the environment. Indirect deaths just grow in scale over time, meaning that suffering continues 20 years later. Of these 4.5 million deaths, they say that most of them, in fact, 3.7 million, are indirect from the spread of disease, health problems, public services, that kind of thing. 7.6 million children under the age of five are still suffering from malnutrition in these regions. They are known as wasting children or stunting. And yet the media will tell you none of this and they cancel these voices. So it's important to think about this in the wake of the death of Phil Donahue. And in fact, in 2006, MSNBC host Chris Matthews was asked about this on the air by journalist Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! They literally cut off her microphone. Watch.
Chris, on 10 years of MSNBC, but I wish standing with you was Phil Donahue. He shouldn't have been fired for expressing an anti-war point of view on the eve of the election. His point of view and the people he brought on were also
important. I don't know what the reasons were, but I doubt it was that.
Well, we have the NBC memo. That was a secret memo that came out that said they didn't want him to be the face of this network, an anti-war face at a time when the other networks were waning.
Can I answer the question?
I think you might talk about it.
Remember me when you answer.
I said, yeah, that, Phil, you were a great patriot. We did have the NBC memo, the secret memo, that said they didn't want their flagship show to be you when the other networks were waving the American flag.
That's what it said. And by the way, that memo was written by a Republican focus group, a Republican counseling group that took the focus group and that reveal that most of the people in the focus group didn't like me. But I saw that, Amy.
And yet you were the most popular show.
Well, often we led the night for the—nobody burned the town down on MSNBC, including me. Fox just ran away with the ratings and continues to enjoy that success.
Were you watching MSNBC that night?
I did. I saw it. And I called the kids. I said, hey, I'm not sure I did it soon enough, but I certainly was grateful for—I mean, I needed the pat on the back at the time.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about that. And, you know, sad too. I mean, it's sad also we're reflecting on these former anti-war voices. Democracy Now, which used to be,
yeah,
you would hold that, not anymore.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, it's sad to see what's happened. All of these voices pushed out. When Tucker speak out against the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right. And the purchasing of land by BlackRock and Vanguard inside of Ukraine, slamming Zelensky.
Right.
And then Tucker gets fired.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Amazing, right?
Yeah, that's sort of the point I'm trying to make here is that anti-war voices suffer the consequences when it comes to mainstream media. Am I saying Donahue was a perfect journalist? Of course not. A lot of his sensationalism was then built upon by the tabloid talk shows. But again, I think that had he been canceled in the year 2024, maybe he could have become an independent media voice. But that was not the landscape on which he was pushed out, so he never really got his retribution. And again, every time I see some government mouthpiece justifying war, I think, how are you going to answer for this? Like, how will your soul answer for this in whatever form of afterlife you believe in? So this was the thought that I put on X today that I want to leave you with, is that he was fired again for speaking out against the war, and history now is sort of on his side. So may his soul rest in peace, given that he was on the right side of history, and made the rest of us remember that we too will have to answer for our stance on war one day. So let me know what you think of that below in the chat.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. And yeah, I think it's worth remembering. I mean, our show here, we don't have to answer to those voices. I mean, we, in the beginnings of the Ukraine war, were censored here. We're censored on YouTube specifically. They took us off the air for talking about the propaganda that was being foisted on you. They banned us for a week. We couldn't broadcast here. Fortunately, Rumble has been amazing and a free speech platform. So we, you know, thank you. And to the, I think we're nearing 600,000 friends over on Rumble right now, which is amazing. So again, it's really difficult right now up against these big tech censorship and these big, you know, legacy media platforms. So we really appreciate you guys subscribing to us. We are anti-war. And we are not run by any big corporations. I mean, we have a few sponsors here on the show, but we don't take money from Big Pharma or the military industrial complex or anything like that. So
right. We
appreciate you for your support on that. By the way, someone was just saying they tried to put the code in for Bunker and they couldn't figure it out on the app. I'm not sure exactly where, but it's in the app somewhere. You have to use that code redacted. So thank you for checking that out. Again, it's free. All right. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about Kamala Harris here and her housing plan, because as we talked about at the beginning of the show, part of the Kamala Harris plan for buying your first home is to give you $25,000 to go towards your down payment of a house. Where's that money going to come from? I know people sit back and say, yeah, I love $25,000 from my government. This is how they try to win votes, right? But as the New York Times and the Washington Post have said, these are populist gimmicks. And where are they going to pay for this? How are they going to pay for this when we're $35 trillion in debt? We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because, of course, we're talking about the economy ad nauseum. And you know that interest rates are dropping, and we think they will drop further, but we're not really sure. So now is the time to call our friends at American Financing. They're a family-owned company that is helping people just like you create savings every month. And their salary-based mortgage consultants look at your full financial picture, all your debts, including those frustrating credit card balances that you're paying maybe 20, 30% interest on every month. They help you create a loan program where they wipe out all of that debt, and they teach you to swap it out for more favorable debt that you can pay off faster. They are a true partner in helping you and your family save money, and they don't charge any upfront or hidden fees. It costs you nothing to find out how much you can save, and they're saving average customers over $800 per month. So try today. Just say, I'm going to learn this. I'm going to see if this works for me. I'm going to take control of my finances. So go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted or give them a call at 866-890-8434 again, or visit AmericanFinancing.net. AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, if you want to learn how to run your housing market into the ground, there's no better teacher than Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. You want to see how to ruin a country and ruin the housing climate? That's all you need to do is look to the north to Justin Trudeau. And that's exactly what Kamala Harris has apparently done as part of her new housing platform. Yes, taking inspiration from Justin Trudeau. You can't make this up. She's taking communist plans from Justin Trudeau. We wanted to bring in David Craden, who just wrote a great new piece on this at the Postmillennial about how Kamala is copying Justin Trudeau. David, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Nice to be back, Clayton.
So tell me, what exactly is Kamala doing here? I mean, the United States is in a housing crisis. Prices continue to go up. Of course, interest rates have been high. Builders have had difficulty getting materials. The cost of materials have skyrocketed, so builders have pulled back on a lot of their building. Rents, of course, have continued to go up over 20%. So America has a housing crisis, and we have a housing shortage. So I guess Canada is the land of milk and honey up there, right?
Wrong. We've had 9 years of Justin Trudeau. We have a housing crisis in Canada, too. Probably worse than the U.S. after 9 years of Trudeau. The average apartment in Ottawa, you know, just, and I'm just outside of the city, is about $1,700 a month. That's a lot of money for somebody not making $150,000 a year. And we have a shortage of housing, too. We've got tent cities in every major Canadian city. Tent cities, as the opposition leader Pierre Poilievre loves to point out every time the issue of housing comes up. And of course, it's getting worse, not better. Justin Trudeau put another $8.5 billion into housing in the last budget as part of $52.9 billion of new spending, putting another $40 billion on the national debt. Are we seeing any evidence of this, though? Of course we're not. The housing crisis continues to get worse. There's no real housing being built, and it's certainly out of reach of most people. Mortgages are out of reach of most people. So the problem here, of course, is that we don't have adequate housing that people can afford. So what is Justin Trudeau always talking about? Affordable housing, except it doesn't exist. But what surprised me, and I suppose I shouldn't be surprised, I listened to Kamala Harris last Thursday as she unveils her economic policy. And of course, if you listen to the Democrats and most of the mainstream media, Kamala Harris is now an economic and a fiscal genius. And she's going to save America from inflation. And you ask Kamala Harris, what are you going to do about inflation? She'll say, inflation is when you go to the grocery store and the price of eggs has gone up from last week. She's very good at recognizing what inflation is, but of course, she's done nothing to reduce inflation except be part of the inflationary cycle of the Biden-Harris administration for the past 3.5 years. It's the same with housing. She has these ideas about housing, and I said when I heard them, doesn't that sound like Justin Trudeau? And of course, it's exactly like Justin Trudeau. It amounts to putting taxpayer money into the pot and hoping that somehow solves the problem. She's talking about $40 billion more than what is currently in the housing pot from Joe Biden already, which is $20 billion. So you're looking at ostensibly $60 billion for new homes. And I quote from Kamala Harris, she is going to be building 3 million new homes over a 4-year period. And she's going to get right to it in her first 100 days as president. And she's calling this a YIMBY movement. Yes, in my backyard.
So this is a disaster. I mean, this is a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, what she's doing is, as you point out in your piece, is you call it communism instead of communism, Kamalaism. And of course, it's been trending on X. But the idea that we're going to put these sort of Soviet style block apartment houses across the United States. So the government, once again, getting involved in building homes, the projects in the United States was an absolute disaster. And that's what she wants to do, these sort of Soviet style block apartments. And yes, in my backyard, of course, they became a haven for criminality.
If we go back to the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson in the United States, that's exactly what happened. The Great Society loved public housing, so-called low-income housing. And as you say, it turned into crime-ridden enclaves, otherwise known as ghettos. That's what happened with the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson. of course, the Soviet Union had a housing program as well. And for decades, the Soviet Union promoted block-style housing that was just awful. And of course, it was always overcrowded. You had sometimes three or four families living in the same housing block, in the same apartments. So this is exactly what Kamala Harris is imagining for America. Yeah, we'll cram them into low-income housing, which of course will be a cesspool for drug addiction and crime and other social ills. And that's exactly what the ramifications and consequences of her housing policy is. But you know what really scares me, Clayton, is she's talking about a free $25,000 grant to every American new homeowner. Now, where do you think that's going to go? Well, it's automatically going to put the price of a new home up by $25,000. It's no different than guaranteed basic annual income. You give people $25,000 a year for doing nothing but sitting on their rear end, and everything is going to become more inflationary. That $25,000 will be worthless. So people who actually make $25,000 plus will find their earnings will plummet. This is called communism. And Donald Trump has quite accurately described this as the most communist-style ticket. When you put Kamala Harris together with her running mate, the governor of Mississippi, Tim Walz, it's going to be the most communist-style Democratic ticket in the history of the United States. And the housing project, this plan, I think is emblematic of how bad the Kamala Harris economic policies really are.
Not only to draw from Justin Trudeau, but also from AOC in the United States and part of this sort of green initiative for housing. You know, if you dive into the documents, what it shows you is that this housing will also provide for illegal immigrants in the United States. So this is a, you know, a brilliant way for Kamala to get these illegal immigrants out of hotels and then into public housing, government-backed, low-income public housing. So Americans who are homeless, good luck getting a house. It's going to be a lot of this will go towards illegal immigrants in the United States. I'm not surprised by that at all. Are you?
Not at all, because if you look at the hotel program for illegal immigrants, especially in New York City, I did a story on this last week, and I was just amazed at how much money the hotels are getting from the city of New York for housing illegals. They're making more money off the illegal immigrant program than they are from people who actually pay money for their hotel rooms. So naturally, you actually have hotels saying, we're no longer in the business of housing people who can afford to pay stay here. We're in the business of housing illegal immigrants. And this is a disaster. And then, of course, these illegal immigrants are turning the hotels into ghettos. But no matter, the hotels are still making $150 up to $300 a night off of illegal immigrants that the city of New York and other cities are paying or footing the bill for. Now, this, if anything, indicates what's going to happen with housing. When you give away a house instead of a hotel room, the same phenomena is going to occur. It's going to be inflationary towards the economy, and it's going to lead to the same kind of ghettoization as we saw during the Great Society. Did America learn anything from the Great Society failure? Probably not, because here the Democrats are at it again. They're trying to do Great Society number two, and it's going to be an unmitigated catastrophe.
Yeah, it's like the Democratic Party wants to go back to the late 60s, 1970s. What a disaster in American history that was, and that's where we are returning. And you have these illegal immigrants having with thousands of dollars on their government-issued credit cards now to get $25,000 so that they can have a free house that's paid for by government money. The continued printing press, as we talked about earlier in the show tonight, the continued printing press of the United States dollar. They absolutely want to turn us into a communist disaster, and that's what they're going to get. David Creighton, great to see you. Yeah, go ahead.
I have to laugh at one thing, Clayton. You talk about the Democrats wanting to go back to the late 60s. They're doing that at their convention this week. It looks like 1968 all over again with the protests. So thanks for letting me
know. Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, it's like we're going right back. You have, and by the way, I mean, think about the parallels there. I mean, you have a candidate who was not selected by any primary voters, just like 1968 and Hubert Humphrey. widely disliked by the Democratic Party, instilled, implanted in Chicago by then Mayor Richard Daley, a pro-war candidate. And that's exactly what they're getting. They're getting a deep state pro-war communist candidate in Kamala Harris, installed at the Democratic National Convention, and no voters have any say in it at all. It's unbelievable.
Tragedy.
So, yeah, it's unbelievable. So we'll be watching as these new platforms get rolled out. We've got price controls, which we talked about earlier on the show. We've got her new housing platform, an inspiration from Justin Trudeau. This is a disaster in the making. David, great to see you up there in Canada. Thank you so much for keeping us honest.
Thank you so much, Clayton. We'll be back again.
And thanks so much, David. Yeah, it's going to be an absolutely crazy week in Chicago. By the way, I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but the Planned Parenthood has rolled out these vans where you can go and get a free vasectomy and free abortions. Yes, Planned Parenthood rolling that out at the Democratic National Convention, roving vans that you can go check out if you're at the DNC and you need an abortion. That's exactly what the Democrats are focused on. That's unbelievable in Chicago right now. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing that, of course, a crazy economic plan and so much more. And the violence, of course, we're going to be watching very closely as so many thousands of illegal immigrants have descended on the city of Chicago versus the population that's lived there for decades. We are sort of in a tinderbox moment right now. Anyway, we're going to be watching that very closely. And we're also covering it in our daily newsletter. I would love for all of you to sign up for our free newsletter. Just go to redacted.inc. Put in your email address. It's not .com. It's .inc. Just put in your email address. We will never sell your email or anything like that. And you'll receive a welcome email once you sign up. And then you just need to confirm that you want to receive the newsletter. And then tomorrow morning, when we publish the newsletter, you'll receive it in your inbox. So that's how you have to do it. You just need to confirm it. That's the one thing. People sign up for it and they're like, I never received the newsletter. And we cover like four or five of the big stories of the day. We cover some things you might have missed while you were sleeping. And we try to do it with a little bit of humor to kind of kickstart your day and cover stories that no one else is really covering in the way that we cover them, at least. So anyway, go to redacted.inc. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time, covering all of the craziness in this crazy clown world. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.